On this Tribal Theocrat podcast, author Justin Cottrell discusses his new book, Rise of the Black Serial Killer. Stay tuned. Well, welcome again to the Tribal Theocrat podcast. I'm your host, Christian Gray. Today is a special show because we have a very special guest. Joining us today is Justin Cottrell, author of the newly published book, Rise of the Black Serial Killer. Thanks for joining us, Justin.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. You are our first interview, so it's very special for our podcast.
I say I feel privileged to be here. It's one of the first interviews. Well, it is the first interview I've given, you know, about my book. And so I'm excited to be here as well. So
great. Well, thank you for giving us that opportunity to break the ice. Tell us about yourself, your interest in black serial killers, and why you wrote the book.
You know, I'm a father and part-time business owner. I'm in this, you know, political environment, socioeconomic environment. It's hard to own a full-time business at times, but nonetheless, I've been researching serial killers for about almost a decade off and on, and just the subject in general, but specifically I've been researching black serial killers for about two and a half years, and I got interested in it because I got challenged, and somebody asked me if there were any black serial killers in an online discussion, and I could think of two. All the books I have on my shelf about serial killers, there were two listed, Wayne Williams and then the Beltway Snipers. And so I thought that's all there were. And once I got to looking, I found more and more and more. And I realized that it's a subject nobody'd ever touched. And so that's what gave me the motivation to start researching. And then what I found when I would go to online forums, I got to where I could actually talk to some of the families of some of the victims, you know, whether, no matter their race. Some of them were white, some of them black, some Hispanic. But they had lost family members, and they were upset because they felt the media had ignored them. The authors had ignored them, Hollywood had ignored them, and even the police to some extent, all because the race of the killer for their family member was black. And so I felt, you know, I almost felt obligated that I had to do something because I had this wealth of information, and it's not something you just lock away in a scrapbook and say, well, that's nice, I'm glad I learned that. So that's kind of what led me to this point.
Great. What about the people who will say, well, so what? If they're black, they're white, aren't all serial killers serial killers? Who cares if one class is guiltier than the other? What do you say to those people who think you're focusing too much on color?
Well, I'm not focusing on color any more than what the media focuses on color. They would have us all believe that serial killers are always white. Out of the 500 or so movies that portray serial killers, all but four of them portray white serial killers. And the four that portray black serial killers, two of them are biopics on the Beltway Snipers, and the other two are fictional characters. And so I would answer with that Hollywood has already set a precedence, as well as the media, of establishing that a serial killer is white. Mm-hmm. And I would also follow up with, it does matter. The race of the serial killer matters, and the reason why is because criminologists and police and police profilers, for years, they were under this false dichotomy that all serial killers were white, and because they assumed that, there were a lot of black serial killers that were slipping through the cracks. Carl Watts is a famous one, Derek Todd Lee is another famous one, and the list goes on and on and on. I can think of about almost three dozen that the initial report was to be on the lookout for a white guy, sandy blonde hair, 35, 40 years old, kind of looks like Joe Dirt, and that was the description they give. But lo and behold, it come out later, wow, this guy was black, and we had the profile wrong. And so race becomes very important because you're talking about people losing their life. And if the guy has killed, say, five people and they're looking for the wrong race, they're looking for someone, as I said, you know, comically, that looks like Joe Dirt, what's going to stop this black guy from getting slipping through the cracks and killing 5, 6, 10, 15 more people? And it's happened before. Well, Carl Watts, they initially were looking for a white guy, as I mentioned, and we know for a fact he killed 44 white women. They actually speculate, based on his numbers, it was closer to 100 women in Michigan, from Michigan all the way to Texas. And he'd already killed 44 before they started looking for a black serial killer.
Wow.
They said, wow, this guy's black. And so what if they would have looked for a black guy in the beginning when he killed, say, 8? There would be a lot of people, their lives would have been spared.
Very good. That's a very good practical point. So much for those who say that racial profiling has no business at all in the police force, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Is this book, Rise of the Black Serial Killer, is it for the layman or the sophisticated stat cruncher, or both? Who's your audience here?
It's actually for both. When I originally started off, it was just going to be raw facts, data, and statistics. But as I got into it and I read some of the stories, and what really moved me a lot were to hear, as I mentioned before, from the families of the victims and to hear their stories. And I read some of the detectives that have worked some of the stories, some of the prosecuting attorneys, and even some of the judges, their accounts of it. And it was really moving. And so I share some of that in the book. And so it's not all stats. There's the largest section of the book is actually I take 35 of the serial killers that I could find the most information on, and I'll talk about that in a minute, the lack of information, but I found the most information on, and I told their story. And these are guys that their stories, most of them have never been told. In fact, out of the 35, only 2 of them have ever been mentioned in books. And so you have 33 that have no mention in books, and their stories, when you read them, you know, some of them were gruesome, some of them were very prolific, some of them killed well over 50 people. But the point is their stories had not been told. And so I tried to appeal with the stats part of it to the statisticians, but then the biographies, I tried to appeal to just the layman that wants to read the stories so that they can see that there really are people that have been affected by these people. It's not just me writing this to stereotype blacks. It's a point to help families that have suffered so that they can get some sort of closure that, hey, guess what? My family member was honored with this work. They were mentioned, and they just weren't forgotten and brushed over like so many of the other media has done in the past.
Right. Do you recommend this book to be read cover to cover as a novel, or do you recommend it being read as a reference work, or both?
You could do it either way. The way I wrote the book is the first 6 chapters, I talk about the bias that the media in Hollywood have against the subject of black serial killers, and then I go through the research that I have, and I show why it's important, and I show the bias against black serial killers. And that's the first 6 chapters are kind of section 1, I guess you'd say. Section 2 are the biographies, the 35 biographies. Mm-hmm. And then section 3, I list every serial killer in my database, 836 black serial killers. And I group them by individuals, by duos. There were teams that killed together. And I also group them by, there's a few unknowns that we know for a fact the police know the killer was black. They have eyewitness accounts, but we just don't know who it was. Sure. Yet they've never caught him. And then I have the last section on gangs and groups, because there were serial killing gangs and groups. Some of them had as few as 3 members, and some of them had as many as 30 members that would go around killing together as one organic group.
Gotcha.
And so there's 3 sections. You could pick either one of the 3, or you could read it front to back. That would work too. Either one would work.
Sounds good. Sounds like your audience is pretty broad then. Anybody can pick up this book and dig right in and enjoy it.
Yeah, and it's funny you mention that. My wife, if somebody else had, I've got other books, like I said, on serial killers here, she's never read one of them.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not her forte. But my book, and it's not just because I wrote it, her husband wrote it, she actually has read it, and she said, wow, this is great. These stories, they're moving. They touched me. And, you know, of course, the last section with all the names, it gets kind of, you know, unless you're a statistician and you're actually looking and doing your research on your own, it can get boring. But the first 2 sections really moved her a lot. In the 3rd one, I've got to say, it did move her some, mm-hmm. because I do have a brief description of each killer, what they did. But it gets, like I said, after 836, it gets monotonous.
So we talk about 10 dead, 20 dead, 30 dead. How many do you have to kill to be a serial killer? What's the definition of a serial killer?
That's actually not an easy answer.
Okay.
For years, let me start off with this. The term serial killer is a very modern term. It came about in the early 80s, some say even the late 70s. But Robert Ressler, he was a FBI criminal profiler, came up with the term. He had helped solve several serial murders, and he came up with the term. He wanted something to kind of group together this rogue personality that was going around slaying people, you know, in different parts of the countries or the country. And so he came up with this term. Well, his definition at that time was this. He said all serial killers that he knew of, that he had investigated, were generally white. They were generally male, 30 to 35 years old, the drifter type. A lot of them kind of looked blue-eyed, brown hair, blondish brown hair. And then he said that they had to kill three or more people on separate occasions over a one-month span with a cooling down period between the crimes. And then the last clincher is, he said they had to kill in a different place at every time. Well, this definition that he had set was so specific. You were talking about one particular group of people. Well, other writers started picking up on it, criminologists and even the media. For instance, Gary Heidnik, he was the guy that was the movie basis for Silence of the Lambs, Buffalo Bill, the deranged serial killer that stored the lady in his basement in the movie. Well, they based that character off Gary Heidnik. He was in Philadelphia in 1987. He had kidnapped six women, but he only killed two of them. He killed one of them by starvation. The other, they got into a fight, but he was keeping them as slaves of a sort, and they were black, and he was a white guy, but he only killed two. But he is the poster child for serial killers.
Sure.
And they did the same with Ed Gein. He was a serial killer that skinned his victims and did some horrible stuff with them, but he only killed two in the 1940s. They think maybe he killed a third, but that's very hypothetical and very circumstantial, but still confirmed two killers. And so, I mean, two kills confirmed. And so you have a precedence of already the general public and criminologists and the media accept two kills or more. But then you had Jeffrey Dahmer step in, another famous white serial killer. He's kind of the nadir of depravity. I mean, he is the bottom of the bottom when it comes to serial killers in most people's opinion, because he killed 17 young boys and men in Milwaukee, Wisconsin in the mid-80s. But the thing is, he killed them all in his apartment. The last 16, the first one he killed in his dad's house when he still lived there. And so the mold had already been broken. We had guys that were younger than that, than the age, and we had guys that were killing in the same location, guys that killed less than two, guys that actually killed four or five people with a cooling down period of, say, 3 or 4 days between murders in less than a month span. But not just that, we had black serial killers popping up too. Robert Ressler, the guy I mentioned that thought up the term serial killer, he was the man that went down to Atlanta, Georgia in 1981 by the FBI. The Atlanta police had called and said, we have a serial killer here killing black children. We have 27 dead. We got to find this guy. And rumor on the street was it was the KKK lynching black people. Robert came in. He looked at the evidence. He said, no, you guys have a black serial killer. This guy's black. And he gave a profile that fit Wayne Williams to a T. Even the age was correct. Every little trait about him. And DNA evidence has since confirmed that Wayne Williams did kill between 27 and 33 young black boys and men in Atlanta. And so you had this mold broken. And so a few years ago, the FBI, they were kind of a little slow coming to it, but they finally came out and said, look, the new definition of a serial killer, if you kill two or more people with a cooling down period between the two murders, and they can be in the same location, it can be less than a month, and it can be outside your race, it doesn't matter what race you are, or if you're a mixture of races. And so this new definition lets any person, basically anybody is a possible suspect for serial killers, not just the Joe Dirt looking, sandy blonde hair, white guy that's the drifter.
Sure.
And so, and not only that, but you also had the let in of two. And that's very important. And the reason why is because in my database, I have, I believe it's around 175, maybe 180 that did kill just two times. And why that's important is because I found a precedence where a lot of these guys, they'll kill once, go to prison 3 or 4 years, maybe 10 years. They'll get out and they'll kill again. And there's a lot of the two-time killers that I have that are still in prison now. And I've got evidence that shows that a lot of killers will go to prison two, three, and even I've got two of them that went four times. And after every release, because of lenient parole laws, as well as the judicial system doesn't throw the book at them, they just slap them on the wrist, they kill every time they get out.
Sure.
And that, which is horrible. But so it helps to wrap these guys in the serial killing mold, because I've got guys that even though they killed two, they attempted 15, 10, right, five others. And some of them, I've got over 20 of the two-time killers that are suspected in one of them up to 70 murders. And so the point is, you've got to include those guys. So I hope that answered your question. That's a very long definition, but people have to understand the history of it and where it's come. It's a term that has evolved.
Yeah, it's very helpful. Very good. I understand that black intelligence is, on average, well below the intelligent level of whites. How, then, are there so many black serial killers? Is it a misconception that serial killers have to have a high intelligence? Or did your research find out that most of your black serial killers do indeed have a high intelligence for their race?
Well, that's another common misconception that was a part of the original definition of serial killer. Originally, because we had guys like Ted Bundy, he was a white serial killer that tested IQ around 138, 140. And you had later on Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber. He was a serial killer, believe it or not, because he was killing people with the Malin bombs. But his IQ was around 170. So people see this. And then you have the movies where you have Hannibal Lecter portrayed, for instance, where he's a genius doctor. That's not the norm for white serial killers. Serial killers, no matter their race, always test within the given norm for intelligence for their race. True, there's white serial killers that have tested above their normal. Likewise, there's some serial killers that are black that have tested a normal above for their race. But I've had people come to me and they say, well, and I've had people, no matter if they're white or black, come to me and say, well, blacks couldn't possibly be serial killers because their intelligence is lower. Well, that's not true. Some of the most prolific black serial killers have actually had intelligence that is below normal.
Wow.
For instance, there's a guy in Florida, and this is in my book. I actually give his biography. People have never heard about him. His name is Eddie Lee Mosley. He was a black serial killer that raped, police suspect, up to 300 women in Fort Lauderdale. Plus, he killed, they think, at least 33 of these, and they were all black women he was killing in the Miami and Fort Lauderdale area. But when it came time for trial, even though he'd already served two prison terms for assault, burglary, and for rape, his trial, it never came about. The judge looked at him. They gave him an IQ test. He tested between 43 and 59, which is well into mental retardation. But because he tested that low, the Florida judicial system said, guess what? We can't try him. He doesn't know the definition of right from wrong.
Wow.
And so he today, since 1981, he has set, maybe 82, somewhere in there, he is set in a state mental hospital in Chattahoochee, Florida.
Amazing.
And nobody's ever heard of him. The most prolific serial killer in Florida history. Another is Carl Watts, the guy I mentioned earlier, between 44 and 100 women. And most investigators say it's 100 because Carl himself said more than once, it's right at 100 women. It's 100 women. He kept with that number, 100 women. And the thing is, his intelligence tested between 67 and 72, depending on the test.
Incredible.
And so what I found is intelligence doesn't really have anything to do with serial killers. Because even with whites, you had like Lucas was a very famous serial killer. He said he killed 600, but it was probably closer to about 20. Henry Lee Lucas. But the thing is, his intelligence was sub 70. So.
Okay.
Just another common misconception.
Yeah, that's really, really interesting. I also know that blacks on average are more violent than whites. So without going into all the specifics of the gore, are the murderous actions of black serial killers more barbaric than other serial killers?
Well, it depends on how you look at it. I guess I'd say it depends on the race, not really how you look at it. In my book, I talk about it, and I won't go into the details. People can look up the term if they want to, necrophilia. And what I found with necrophilia and with cannibalism, there's not very many white serial killers that did it, and there's not really a lot of blacks that did it. But what I found is almost 2.5 times more black serial killers participated in cannibalism than whites, and right at 2 times participated in necrophilia. Mm-hmm. And so you have almost double, but still, like I said, it's a small handful. I'm talking less than 20 for black serial killers for either one. So it's not a widespread sure. thing. But everybody thinks of serial killers as they look at Jeffrey Dahmer. Well, he did both of those sick, gory, nasty things.
Right.
But they don't realize there's black serial killers have done it as well.
Sure.
And another thing to look at is not just those two pretty bad things or way bad things, is to look at overkill and torture. Overkill is, let's say the serial killer strangles the victim, and then they're not satisfied the person's dead. They decide to beat the body, or they call it abusing the corpse, or they run him over with a car, or maybe they stab him several times. It happens with white serial killers. One of the worst was Edmund Kemper. They call him the serial killing giant because he was 6'9" and 300 pounds. He was in Southern California, but he's a famous white serial killer that overkilled his victims. And what I found is overkill is very prevalent if the victim was white. If the victim was black, it did happen occasionally, but it wasn't the norm. The norm seems to be with white victims, especially when they're female, is they were tortured before they were killed, or after they were killed, they were stabbed, beat, somehow kicked. I mean, there's stories that I don't feel safe airing here.
And this is by black killers, correct?
By black killers with white victims. Like I said, they were more... they're more ready to, it seemed, to abuse whites. And,
sure.
and some of them even talked about it in court. They'd say, well, you know what? I beat that blankety blank up after I killed her because I hate whitey or I hate white people.
Well, that makes sense. The FBI crime statistics show that blacks are, in general, more violent than whites. So I thought there had to be some parallel with serial killers across races.
Yeah, and it fits with serial killers. I mean, that's not a misconception. It's actually true. But like I said, it seems that what I found, another way to look at it, and I'm trying to get a proper analysis on this. I've gone through in my list, and I list in the database, or I mean, in my database as well as the book some, but what method of killing the serial killer preferred. And sometimes it varied per victim. You know, once in a while they'd shoot, maybe they might stab another or strangle another. But the thing is, most black victims were shot. That's mm-hmm. the most common means. With white victims, shooting is almost identical with strangulation and stabbing. The three are just mano-a-mano. I'm talking within one or two killers of each other, or victims of one another.
Okay.
And what I found, too, is the combination of killing methods is more profound with white victims. A killer might use three or four killing methods on one victim, for instance, whereas with black victims, they just kind of shot them and went their separate ways.
Okay.
And so, and that kind of plays in, but like I said, you've got to look at it too, what was the motivation of the killer? And there was a lot of, you know, I've been able, thankfully, to find a lot of court records where these guys would just blurt out in court some of the most racist things you've heard in your life, to the point that they get thrown out of court. The judges say, you know, bailiff, take this guy to the holding cell because he's being unruly yeah. and the things he's saying is wrong. But I mean, he would say stuff like this courts, I've heard stuff like the courts are the KKK and I'm out to kill all the whites I can. They're blue-eyed devils, white devils, so forth and so on. So
fascinating. Was your research able to dig up the race of the typical black serial killer's victim?
Yes, it was. And let me see if I have that right here in front of me. I actually was. Of the 836, I broke it down into four categories, by the way. I have black killers that killed black victims only, black killers that killed white victims, blacks that killed a mixture, and then I have the unknowns. I can't find information. And thankfully, there's only 19 killers. I don't know the race of the victims. I don't know the names. I just know the number. I've not been, they're either too old for me to find the records, or they're archived, and I've not been able to get to them yet. But what I found is 39% of black serial killers always killed within their race. But I've also found that 33%, so just slightly below that number, killed exclusively white. But I found that 25% killed a mixture of white and black. They might kill two blacks and two whites, for instance.
Interesting.
So you've got a total of 58.5% of black serial killers killed out of their race at least one or two times. Sure. Whereas you had the minority, 39. And where this is important, people might say, well, how's all this add up? Well, when you look at white serial killers, for instance, 94% of the time they kill within their race exclusively.
Right.
So you only had 6% of white serial killers that chose to kill out of the side of the race once. Right. It's night and day, to use that analogy.
Sure. And so, presuming that most serial killers live around and work amongst their own race, this suggests that they're going out of their way to get to a white victim.
It is. And a lot of the white victims, they did live in the same area. That does happen. But at the same time, you did have guys that were driving outside their neighborhood. And for instance, Carl Watts, I've mentioned him twice already. He's kind of the big boy serial killer. So I mention him a lot because he's so unheard of. But he would drive to college campuses that were white, even though he lived in a middle class kind of neighborhood, a mixed neighborhood in Detroit, and right on the edge of kind of the black part of town. But he would travel to Ann Arbor, to the University of Michigan, and then also other smaller universities across the Canadian line and other little colleges in Detroit area, and he would hunt these white victims, and he would say the reason why is because they had evil eyes. He saw that white women had evil eyes, and the only way he could rid their spirits from the earth was to kill them and then burn their garments.
Insane.
Yeah, very, very insane. And I would say insane, by the way, even if he was white. If some white serial killer said that, I'd say this guy is absolutely off his rocker.
Sure thing, absolutely. You alluded to the media earlier, but talk more about the media's role in pushing this propaganda that serial killer equals white, as well as their work in squelching the news of black serial killers. Can you speculate on what interest is it of theirs to do this? It seems to be intentional hush crimes to keep this stuff silent and to keep promoting this false notion of serial killers are whites. Why do they do that?
Why do they do this? There's probably a lot of answers to that question. There's a myriad of answers. And I really don't answer that question in the book, why do they do this? I kind of leave that unanswered for the viewer or the reader to answer.
Fair enough.
But I give instances of it. And there are dozens and dozens. And I don't just pull from serial killers. I pull from crime as well. For instance, one of the things that I discuss in there is whenever you pull up lynching after civil rights movement, you find two. You find the James Byrd story. He was a black guy in Jasper, Texas, got drugged behind a truck. And you find James Donald. Mm-hmm. He was in the early 80s. I believe it was Mobile, Alabama. He was hanged by some KKK members, and they use those as the classic examples of lynching. But in my book, I show proof in 2006, I believe it was 2005, 2006, we have a guy, I cannot remember his name right now, it's a very difficult name to pronounce. He was from Cuba, but he was actually black. He migrated here with his family, and he was in Riverside County, California, but he killed three white women, and two of them he hanged with their own garments. He lynched them and hanged them execution style. And so, but you can't find anything on this guy. Every media record you go to, it says, for instance, the news stories, it says link unavailable, link's been deleted. And thankfully, there's been a few of the family members have saved the links and put them on public forums and emailed them to me and said, look, I don't know why the media is blacking out the subject, no pun intended, but they are. But look up James Byrd. Okay. You had Jesse Jackson marching in the streets. Mm-hmm. You had the NAACP calling for a race riot. You had the new Black Panthers down there armed with shotguns and M16s calling for blacks to stand up to the white oppressors when that happened. But when you have a black serial killer lynching somebody, nobody hears about it. And I give other examples. Look at Jeffrey Dahmer. We've got serial killers that are black that are killed a lot more victims than him,
right.
Did the same things, participated in cannibalism, but they're never heard of.
So while you...
And not...
So
go ahead.
I'm sorry. So while you don't speculate in your book as to why they do this, this is not something that people are making up. This is a real phenomenon. The media are painting this one way.
They are. And one of the most famous cases that I give an example of, and I wasn't the first one to ever mention this. I found it actually, I cannot remember the author's name right now. Oh, I know who it is. It was Anthony Walsh. He's a criminologist, very famous criminologist from Boise State University. He mentioned it in an article called the Media Bias Against African-American Serial Killers. And he mentioned that during the trial of Rodney King in the early 90s, there was a serial killing cult called the Yahweh Cult that was run by Hulon Mitchell out of Miami, Florida. They killed four of their own members that went and tattled on them or narked on them, called them out to the cops. But besides that, they killed 23 white devils, they called them. Hulon, who was the leader, he called himself Yahweh Ben Yahweh. He told his cult members, he said, if you want to get in my eternal book of life, which, by the way, comically, was a three-ring binder on his desk that also had phone numbers and was a portfolio of his. But if you wanted to get in that special book, you had to bring a finger, an ear, or other body part from a white that you had killed.
Sick.
And they know for a fact they killed at least 23. That trial went on at the same time as Rodney King's, but even in Miami, Florida, some of the news stations chose to carry Rodney King's trial instead of the filmed Yahweh trial.
Classic.
And they did film part of it. And so here you have, and that's the thing is, and Anthony Walsh does a great job. He says in there, he said, if you had a group of whites that were working collectively together and they killed 23 black people and they dared call them black devils, he said you would have every black militant organization in the country marching and starting, and there would be race riots in every major black city. But he said because it was the opposite, it was white victims at the hands of a black cult, it was wiped under the rug. Nobody hears about it. I've actually told people about the Yahweh cult, and if they're not familiar with it, which 99% of people I talk to are not familiar with it, they look at me and say, what? That sounds like a conspiracy. Do you wear a tinfoil hat? But when I send them the articles and I show them there's the wealth of information that's actually there, they are just shocked and they say, wow, why did I never hear about this? Why did I hear about the Rodney King trial instead at the time? Because there was a media bias.
Right.
They don't want to paint blacks in a negative light. And I do talk about that a little bit in the rest. I guess I do answer it some, but they don't want to be accused of being racist. And a lot of times whenever, you know, this leads into when a news media story does carry a black serial killer, usually it doesn't get outside their general area.
Sure.
You know, if it happens in Houston, it stays in Houston. The story
right.
doesn't get spread all around the country like this Trayvon story has out of Miami, Florida, where the Hispanic man killed the teenager recently. That's on every news channel and blog in America right now.
Right.
It's everywhere.
But
that doesn't happen with black serial killers. They get wiped under the rug.
I've also noticed that the portion of that coverage that actually pointed to some things that we're not supposed to know about, namely that the victim was on top of the shooter at one point beating him up, that was only covered very, very limited by a local agency, and then you don't hear about it anymore.
Yeah. Well, and that's typical, and I actually give an example of that, not with that story. That came up actually after I finished the book. But I give an example. During Jeffrey Dahmer's trial, Jeffrey Dahmer killed 10 black men.
Mm-hmm.
But the others, he killed some men that were, or young men that were born in Laos, a couple of white guys and a couple of Hispanic guys. It was a hodgepodge mixture. He was first labeled the racist serial killer, the Milwaukee monster. He's a racer, racist.
Right.
And that was everything painted about him. And I was still young. I was still in school when that happened. But I remember he was a racist. I remember my parents saying, gosh, is this guy a racist? He was killing blacks. Well, he killed everybody from another race. And the thing is, in his own words, he came out and answered the media. He gave a media interview when he was in jail. And he also said in court, he said, I'm not a racist. He said, I prefer, because he was homosexual, he said, I preferred a certain body type.
Sure.
He said, no matter the race, if they fit this exact clone of, you know, of mm-hmm. what he liked, that's what he killed. But even after the trial, even today when his name gets published, you still see racist thrown in there somehow because his victims were black.
Right.
And that happens with every serial killer, which there's only 12 that I have found that are white serial killers that have all black victims. Every one of them, it's the same way. It's the first thing is the media says racist serial killer. I've got 279 black serial killers that killed only whites, but never once have I found one instance of them saying, wow, is this guy a racist because he killed white women or white men or white children? Never once. Yet the 12 white serial killers that kill outside their race and kill only black victims, every one of them is labeled racist, every one of them. And it's always the first thing that comes up is this a hate crime?
Right. I've got an interesting question for you. Here at Tribal Theocrat, we are kinists. We are white advocates. We believe in a future for our people, and we believe that Christian theology sanctions that. And so we do a lot of similar work in that we are not afraid to criticize other races and to point out some differences and so forth. Since you're doing some of that in your book, did you experience or do you anticipate experience any blowback from releasing this book under your real name? After all, in our politically incorrect culture, when you criticize blacks in any way, that's racism and hate.
I agree. And you know, I've experienced some of that, but it's funny. I've talked to a lot of black victims, or should I say not victims, families, family members that lost victims that are black, as well as just blacks in general. I've got a fan page on Facebook, and there's several blacks that are fans that never lost a family member to black serial killer, but they're supportive of it. The main flack I've taken is from white people. They always want to accuse me of racism. And so early on in my research, I did work under a pseudonym, and except for when I've corresponded with several criminologists and university professors, and I gave them my real name. I didn't want them to think, golly, who's this guy, this weird pseudonym?
Sure.
And so I talked to my wife about it, and I looked into it, and there was really no way for me to publish under a pseudonym. And without being traceable, people would be able to figure out, because payments were sent to me either by my publisher or bookstores or customers via the internet, and it's traceable. If people wanted to figure out what the pseudonym was, they could figure it out. And so I figured, why hide? I don't have racist intentions. I'm doing this because no one's done it before. As I tell people, and I mentioned this in a YouTube video that I just put out recently, or I guess it's still under the works, it'll be out Monday or Tuesday. If this subject had already been published, and there were as many books as there are on, say, Jeffrey Dahmer or Ted Bundy, I would have been happy to buy their books. I would have been more than happy to buy their books. And if I had found the same wealth of information about white serial killers, if it was a subject nobody had ever written on, you can guarantee I had been the first one standing in line, not to get rich and famous, but to tell the story.
Right.
And so it's not racially motivated. It was that I consider it a blessing. I had been blessed with this information. I had heard these stories firsthand. I said, you know what? I'm going to go tell it. And I'm not afraid of the fallout. I'm not afraid of threats I may get, and I'm sure they will come. I'm not afraid of what people may say about me in the media. I'm not afraid of that. Because I look at it, and I'm just telling the truth.
Good.
And how can facts and truth be considered racist? I've got media records. I've got court records. I've got prison records, parole records. I've even got eyewitness accounts as well as confessions from serial killers. Some of these serial killers, many of them are still in prison, and they write on blogs, and some of them are very frank that, hey, guess what? I'm guilty. I did this.
Right.
And so how could I be considered racist when I'm just using publicly available information is my train of thought.
Good for you. So I really appreciate and am encouraged by your fearless attitude. Sounds like you're motivated by truth. This is the time for you to really sell your book. Is there anything in particular about the book that we haven't discussed that you want to mention right now?
Well, there's a lot of things. A lot of people, you know, might see the book cover or hear the story and think, oh, it's just about serial killers, boring yawn. It's not just about serial killers. It's a look into media bias. And no matter what the story is, I've got an entire chapter about it. It's called The Bias Against Black Serial Killers. And I talk about the media and the entertainment industry's bias against the subject. And if there is anything that's in history, in our modern history especially, stuff that we're living around right now and is not being told, is totally being ignored, we'd want to know. And so I look at this and I talk about it, and I'm hoping that it spurs people to start looking at, you know, into other things that maybe the media is not talking about, whether it be health related, politically, or, you know, political, financially, economically, whatever it might be that the media is kind of just hush hush about. We don't want to talk about it. But besides that, I dispel a lot of common misconceptions about serial killers, not just black, but, you know, like I mentioned with intelligence, it's not all geniuses. A lot of the white guys are pretty low in intelligence too. But one of the things that I really am proud about, it was a section I added towards the end, kind of in the middle. I kept finding all these serial killers that killed at home. And then I also found guys that were, had been repeat offenders, and also guys that had been slapped with a lessened sentence. Maybe they got a death sentence originally, but then because of some silly technicality, and I do mean just the most asinine things you've ever heard in your life, their sentence was reduced to maybe 25 years. And so I covered those three sections. And like I said, those were add-ons. I got to look and I thought, man, I've got these notes here. Can I flesh this out some? So I fleshed them out. And what I found, for instance, I believe it's close to 100 somewhere in there. Maybe it's 105. I'd have to look at my notes here. Serial killers that are repeat offenders. And I don't mean that they robbed a store before they, you know, and served a term before they were serial killers. I mean, as I mentioned before, they murdered and then they served a sentence and then they murdered again. and then they served another sentence. It's a very common problem. And this does happen with whites. There's a few white serial killers that have fit that same that same mold, but there's a ton of black ones. Right. And I'm going to tell you right now, as a parent and as a husband, if I was living near one of these guys, and I'm not, if they were in my state and I saw they're coming up to, for parole, I would be one of the first ones there, no matter what their race was, to talk to the parole board and say, are you crazy? This guy's killed 13 people. Mm-hmm. You cannot let him out again. You've let him out twice already. What are you thinking? You're endangering people. You know what he's going to do. And so I talk about that to try to raise awareness that it's not just black serial killers that happens to. I mean, you've got Hispanics and whites too. But still, prison boards and parole boards are being very lenient because of prison overcrowding to let these monsters, and I do call them monsters no matter their race, to let them out in society again, knowing that this is a condition that really cannot be reformed. There's none of them in history that have ever been reformed. They always fall back into it. Once they start, they keep going. They may have a break, but they keep going. There's no way to reform them.
Absolutely. Totally agree. That's one of the reasons I believe we have specific capital crimes in the scripture. There are certain crimes that really mark a person as irreformable, and they need to be, that evil needs to be put away from our midst.
Yeah, and that's funny you mention that, because that's something I don't really talk about that in the book, but you could see that in there, because I talk about from the Department of Justice, they came out with a survey last year from 1980 to 2010 of how many murderers got death row convictions, and they compared it to how many of those death row convictions ended up with executions. And what's funny is, just on a individualistic basis, blacks kill more people than whites. I believe it's like 53% of all murders, no matter if they're serial killer or not, in that time period were black. Maybe it's 54%, but still just a little higher than whites. Yet death row convictions for whites are several percentage points higher than blacks. And then it's even further with executions. The blacks, a lot of times their sentence gets kicked back to life, or even less than that, because like I said, a silly technicality. But the group that kills the least gets the most death row convictions and gets the most executions, and that's whites.
Wow.
And I show that in the book. And like I said, that's not something I made up. That is Department of Justice, a published survey that they've done, and they have the most accurate information on this.
Fascinating. Well, this has been very valuable information for me and hopefully for our audience here at Tribal Theocrat. Tell us how we can get in touch with you to learn more about your project and perhaps order a copy of your new book.
Well, you can look me up a couple of ways. You can look me up on Facebook, just my name, Justin Cottrell. And there's probably a couple of us with that name in the country, but there's not a lot of us. And maybe you can put a link to my Facebook page podcast. But besides that, you can go to my website, Sons of Japheth, and that's J-A-P-H-E-T-H. At the end is how you spell Japheth.com, so sonsofjapheth.com. You can see a brief little biography of me there. You can buy the book. You can read the first chapter, the table of comments. And besides that, something I'm doing to, you know, this isn't some get-rich-quick scheme for me. This was, it's been a journey for me. I put so many midnight hours into this. I have dedicated myself, I live in a climate in the north, so during the wintertime, I'm at home a lot. Because of the snow on the ground. And so I was able to, during the winter months, just pour myself into this. And so to help get this information out, I'm also putting out YouTube videos. My son's a video editor, and we put those out. And it's information that's talked about in the book. And sometimes it goes above and beyond that, because whenever you write a book, there's certain things, it just gets to where there's too much information there. And so some of that I've saved for video format so people can go there and learn about it, and they can hear me, they can see me talk. And I actually answer the question. One of the first videos I talked about is Justin a racist? And I go into that about what is racism and defining that, and also my motivation for writing the book.
Good.
I go into that. And so, like I said, that's just a free informational thing I'm giving out to people. And if people see that and still write me off as some racist kook, I guess I can't change their opinion,
right.
But I'm hoping it helps bring awareness to this subject, because right now, from 1860 to present, we have 836 black serial killers. We've got 832. That's almost mono-y-mono. Blacks are slightly higher. that means it's a part of history that's never been told. And I want people to wake up to this. I want people to realize that they are capable of serial murder. I have almost 5,100 victims in my database. And it makes me wonder, if people had wrote about black serial killers in the 70s and the 80s, whenever books about this subject started coming out, how few less murders would there be if they had highlighted a lot of black serial killers? They did a great job highlighting Ted Bundy's. But what about the Carl Watts?
Right. And the real point behind this 50 or this near 50-50 split is that blacks have never really been above 13-14% of the U.S. population. So this shows that they are serial killers well above their population rate.
They are. And one of the things I go in the book, I forgot to mention this, hope we're not out of time. I do what's called a decade-by-decade analysis from 1860 to present. And this helps a lot of ways because I compare it to population during that decade, and I show how many white, how many black, Hispanic, and Asian serial killers there were for each decade so that you can divide it by their population and you can decide what the factors are, how much are they either overrepresented or underrepresented. And what I found is blacks in 1950 is the lowest percentile they ever had in this country of serial killers. It was 26%. It was still two times their population. Whites, on the other hand, have never been overrepresented. They've always been underrepresented. And historically, they're underrepresented by almost 1.75 times. Blacks, on the other hand, are almost four times overrepresented historically. And that's shocking. And if I wasn't a writer and I was reading that, and I'd look at it and say, wow, why have I never heard of that?
Right.
Why have I never heard that this minority is committing far more crimes than I've ever been led to believe? Four times their population. And I'd want to know. And I would actually try to help out. What can I do, guys? You know, something's got to be done here. And that's why I feel that, you know, I agree with I actually quote Booker T. Washington in the book. I believe that he had some good ideas because he was noticing black crime in the early part of the 1900s and late 1800s. Now, I don't agree with all of his solutions, but I agree with his conclusions that it was happening. And I also agree he found out why it was happening. It was happening because after the war between the states, there was this fatherless generation. These men didn't have an ambition to hold a job. They didn't have an ambition to stick with one woman. So you had a generation of black men and women that forsook the entirety of the national laws and the state laws because they weren't taught to respect laws and respect authority. And Booker T, he really waxes eloquent on that. Now, he thought you could fix it just by education. I say no. You've got to have the gospel, the true gospel in there. And yeah, education is going to be important, but you've got to have the gospel first.
Excellent.
And so, I do talk about that in the book because I want people to understand that this phenomenon it started in about 1865 is my first serial killer this black. Okay. And there's got to be some reason it started. And so I outline that in there, what I believe started it. So
that's terrific. We hope people wake up to the fact that blacks are more likely to be serial killers and that there's an incredible media bias to hush this up. I'm glad you wrote the book. It's a topic that needs to be discussed. As you mentioned, it has not been discussed until now. So I thank you for doing that, and I thank you for coming on the show and talking about it. And we will link to your material on tribaltheocrat.com, and we wish you best in your upcoming book tour and the signing tour and the future radio shows you will be on. Thanks for coming on the show, Justin.
Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it. And just any time I can bring awareness to this subject, it really tickles me. It makes me feel good.
Well, thanks for joining us again for a Tribal Theocrat podcast. And special thanks to our guest, Justin Cottrell. Please be looking for him to appear on various radio shows, including The Political Cesspool, to talk about his new book. And be sure to check out the links that we provided on tribaltheocrat.com to Justin's website, where you can find out more about his project and how to order a copy. And don't forget to check us out on Facebook and Twitter and use our comment section to let us know what you think. Thanks again. See you next time.